We may come from different ends of the radio dial, but Radio 3 and Radio 6 Music share a common passion, music.
Join us live on both stations for the 6 Music Prom. We'll have live music from the Stranglers, Laura Marling and Kerris Matthews, all performing with the London Sinfonietta.
6 Music and Radio 3 present the 6 Music Prom.
Tomorrow night on BBC Radio 3 at 10:15.
Well, that's actually the third of tomorrow's proms. The first is at lunchtime, proms chamber music featuring works by Gustav Holst as well as his daughter Imogen, and a UK premiere, The Moth Requiem by Sir Harrison Birtwistle, and in between a couple of motets from the 15th century Eton choir book, the BBC Singers and the National Ensemble, conducted by Nicholas Cogg. And then for the first prom of the evening, David Atherton conducts the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, Moore Holst as well as Vaughan Williams, his London Symphony, and the world premiere of Nishat Khan's first sitar concerto, The Gate of the Moon, which he says will be a commemoration of the treasures of Western classical music that ring, he says, in my psyche and my soul. That prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, begins tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 11 o'clock and time now for Jazz Lineup with Kevin Legendre.
The energetic music of US vibraphone master Gary Burton. I'll be profiling his new album Guided Tour on the show and talking to the man himself.
I do feel I don't have to prove myself anymore. I can sit back and choose my moments in the music, and I also see the group as all of my expression.
Also on tonight's programme, session music recorded at the BBC's Maid of Elle studios featuring the inspired duo of saxophonist Jason Yard and pianist Andrew McCormack, who celebrate their fifth anniversary of playing together this year. But first off, let's set things in motion with a brand new release by a revered elder statesman of British jazz, the conductor, arranger and composer Mike Gibbs, a man whose early recordings such as Tanglewood 63 are much sought after collector's items. His new project celebrates the spirit of the legendary Gil Evans, who was surely an inspiration to Mr. Gibbs during his formative years. He also unveils a new band, 12, whose members include saxophonist Julian Siegel and Finn Peters, drummer Jeff Williams, and bassist Michael Janish. The album has original music by Gibbs, as well as songs by Gil Evans and other composers such as Carla Bley and Horace Silver. Here is Silver's hard bop classic Sister Sadie, given the special Gibbs treatment. We'll be right back. Horace Silver's Sister Sadie, given a new spin by Mike Gibbs Plus 12 from their cracking album Mike Gibbs Plus 12, Play Gil Evans, which you'll find on the prolific and always interesting Worldwind Recordings. Fans of vocalist Bobby McFerrin will know that his tastes are eclectic, to say the least. Horace Silver, The Beatles and Mozart are just a few of the artists he's covered over the years. Now he brings his inimitable voice to the timeless repertoire of spirituals on his new album, Spirit You All. His fine band is led by Gil Goldstein, but this track, Every Time, features Esperanza Spalding on bass and vocals. Every Time by Bobby McFerrin featuring Esperanza Spalding from Bobby's new album Spirit You All. We kicked off the show with music by Mike Gibbs, and we now turn to a man who's worked with him and many others, one of the great exponents of the vibraphone, Gary Burton. I caught up with him a few months ago when he was in London to perform at Ronnie Scott's. Before we hear from Gary, let's listen to a track from the new album Guided Tour by his band, Gary Burton's New Quartet. Remembering Tano by the new Gary Burton Quartet from their fantastic current album Guided Tour by, of course, the master vibraphonist and educator Gary Burton. He joins me. Gary, welcome to Jazz Lineup.
Yeah, nice to be here.
It's great to have you back. We spoke a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember.
And at the time, we were talking about, I think, the first new Gary Burton Quartet album, which was Common Ground.
That's right, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So how have things moved on in that time?
Well, quite good. The group toured for that year, and then I took a year off from the band and toured with Chick Corea for a year. And now I'm back to the group again with a new record, and we're touring Europe and Britain, and then we'll do the U.S. Later this year. We seem to be in a pattern of going back and forth between the band and other projects.
So you're doing a lot of dates, which is a great way to develop a group, isn't
it? Yeah, there's no substitute for playing on somewhat a regular basis. I mean, you can always go into a studio with excellent players and make a good record, but there's a growing together that happens and when you play night after night, and the songs get a chance to evolve, and you get more and more used to playing with each other, and even the component of the audience is a factor. I've noticed this all my career. You rehearse a piece and you think this is perfect, the arrangement is great, and you go out and play it first time on a concert, and immediately you notice the introduction's too long or the ending wasn't right. And you never notice it until there's an audience listening to it, and you hear it in a different way for some reason when there are people there.
You're receptive to their reaction. You're picking up on that. And then you're, I suppose, growing with the music in a kind of conversation with the audience.
Yeah, that's right. When I play, and I think we all do this, I'm constantly asking myself, what is the listener out there thinking? How are they hearing this? We do it in conversation with people by looking at their faces as we talk to them. And we can tell if we're going on too long about something. They'll start to, you know, give you that look like, okay, I got it, and so on. And with musically, I try to recreate that same thing, and I do look at the audience frequently, but I'm constantly imagining that I'm one of them, and what am I thinking about this performance? Is it going right? Is it going by me too fast? Is it too slow and boring? Is it become repetitive or what? And I manufacture my own sense of feedback, and having the people right there makes it easier to do.
We talk about communication and feedback. Obviously, that's very important within the group as well, the interplay. You have these excellent players, these three accompanists, who, in fact, are leaders in their own right. Antonio Sanchez on drums, Julian Lager on guitar, and Scott Coley on bass. They've all made records. They've all led bands. They're not just sidemen. When you were coming up, when you were a sideman playing with the likes of Stan Getz, I think there were probably fewer accompanists who were also leaders. It seems that this more recent phenomenon of people like Antonio Sanchez or Scott Coley playing with the likes of Pat Metheny or Andrew Hill and then making records in their own right, that really seems to have gone to another level, because it's easier for people to make records now. You know, they can start their own labels relatively simply. And with that in mind, I mean, the significant thing about this album is that you've got 10 tunes, and every member of the band contributes.
Yes, that's one of the...
Did you want that specifically?
I didn't think about that at first. I mean, I hired them first as players. And then when I started the first tour we went on, I was looking for tunes for a repertoire. This is before we made the first record even. And suddenly, you know, Antonio's bringing some tunes, and here's Scott with his, and I already knew Julian was writing tunes, and turns out we all had songs to offer, and I made that a part of the first record to make sure everybody got included, and did so again on the new record, and it's not every band that has four writers in it, and what's more, our styles are individual, but it's all music that's very comfortable for us to play. Everybody's material seems to be a good fit for the band. We found a real solid common voice, I think, as a group. And you only get that from time to time in the business. I mean, I can go through my 50-year-long career and probably name five times I've been in a band that really clicked like this. And when people ask me, what do you mean exactly? I usually say, like the Beatles. There were four guys, each with their talents, but put them together and it was a super combination. And that's, you know, the kind of thing that only happens occasionally. My first group like that was the Stan Getz Quartet that I was in when I was in my early 20s. And then it happened periodically again every decade or so in groups of my own over the years. And I'm happy to say I'm in one of those groups now.
Well, far be it from me to compare Antonio Sanchez to Ringo Starr, but here is Antonio Sanchez in action, not just as a great drummer, but as a composer as well. This is a piece called Monkfish. That was Monkfish by the new Gary Burton Quartet, and it's a tune by the drummer Antonio Sanchez. Gary, I want to talk about guitarists and guitars, because
okay.
that is an instrument that has cropped up time and again mm-hmm. in your career. If we go right back to the 60s, we see Chet Atkins, mm-hmm. you playing with Chet Atkins, Larry Coryell in the 70s. I could go on, Pat Metheny, Ralph Towner, John Scofield, etc., etc. There have been a lot of collaborations with guitarists.
It's
what
true.
Is it about the instrument that you like?
Well, in the beginning, it wasn't even my idea. I got hired by a guitarist in Nashville who had the idea that he would like vibes and guitar together. And it did turn out to be a pretty winning sonic combination. The instruments complement each other well. And as I describe it, each has a mellow kind of tone, and you can tell the difference. This is a guitar, that's a vibraphone. But if you play in unison, they kind of blend together and form a third combined sound, which I call the Git Vibe. You know,
I thought about that on this album, on this the previous album in particular. There's a kind of delicacy that Julian has in mm-hmm. the way that Julian Lager, that he has in the way that he plays, and that he chords in particular, where they seem to be brushed and soft, yet at the same time they're incisive. And I think that that does work very well with the vibraphone, which has this almost melting quality.
Mm-hmm.
And the two things, they're like liquid coming together.
Yeah. But, I mean, I stayed with the guitar. I formed my first band with Larry Coryell with a guitar because I wanted to combine rock and country music with jazz, and so I had to have a guitar to make that realistically possible. And that kind of got me into the world of guitar. I just keep coming back to it. I haven't always played just with guitar, but it seems like every, you know, 5 years or so, if I've strayed away and I'm using horn players for a while, I get the urge to come back and connect with another guitar player. I do seem to have a knack for finding guitarists. I'm like a guitar magnet somehow.
That's the first time I've ever heard a vibraphonist call himself a guitar magnet.
I seem to find young players who are yet to be discovered. And I spot them, you know, early on and have them in my band. And that certainly applies to John Scofield and Pat Metheny. Kurt Rosenwinkel was another one. And now Julian, my latest guitarist, who I saw on television when he was 12 years old. And he played about 20 seconds. And I knew that he had great talent. I said, this kid can play. And I thought about it for a few days, and I said, I've got to find out who this is. So I called up, got calling around, and found out his name and that he lived in California. Tracked him down, had a long conversation with him and his parents, and arranged for us to play together at a big conference event happening in California near where he lived. And he was so much better than I'd even expected that we started playing together off and on from then on. He's 25 now. We've been doing this for 13 years. And we made our first record together when he was 15. He's just fantastic.
As I've been listening to this album a lot, I've thought to myself, well, you haven't written all of the pieces. You've kind of given some space to the other musicians. And at times as well, you're not soloing that much.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because when you reach a certain level in the music, when you've been playing for a long time, you don't feel that you have to just play every note under the sun and assert yourself constantly to be musically fulfilled, as it were?
Yeah, I do feel I don't have to prove myself anymore. I can sit back and choose my moments in the music. And I also see the group as all of my expression. You know, it is my band. My name is on the cover. And so I think whatever anyone in the group does also reflects on me. So so I don't mind if this tune is a big feature for the guitar, or this one is a big feature for the drums, or whatever. I get plenty of solo space as it works out. And I also have a model that I like to use, which is the classical string quartet. In a string quartet, there isn't a star player. maybe to a little bit extent the first, the top violin. But mostly the string quartets are written with a fairly equal division of amounts of notes and, you know, a really balanced ensemble. And I remember first kind of getting fascinated with string quartet music back in the 60s and 70s. And I remember having a conversation with Steve Swallow, my bass player in those days, about wouldn't it be great if a jazz band, instead of being a couple of soloists up front and a bass and drums in the back, you know, just keeping time, if in fact it was a four-way conversation with more or less equal roles for all of the players. So I've tried to keep going in that direction.
Great. Okay. Well, Gary, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Just one more question before you go, which is a little bit off the wall, but you'll see where I'm going with this. Why does Jane Fonda keep calling you?
Well, that was just a funny phrase that I came across in a magazine reading a story one day, and it kept sticking in my mind that could be a funny tune title. And I was waiting for a song that was kind of lighthearted and happy to come along. I've actually sat on that title for about 10 years. Pat Metheny kept saying he wanted to use it, but he never came up with the tune that would fit it. And so I finally called him and told him I've used the title. Now, I wrote a waltz for this record, and I said, this is a good fit. So Jane Fonda called again. I never met Jane in my life, and everybody keeps asking, so how do you know Jane?
Well, this is, I'm thinking, was she calling you in Barbarella mode? or was it in China Syndrome mode?
Yeah,
or?
No. In fact, she wouldn't know me from Adam, I'm sure. But it just seemed like a funny phrase, and, you know, so it became a title.
Okay, well, we're going to play out with Jane Fonda Called Again, composed by Gary Burton, from the album Guided Tour. Gary, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very
Same
much.
Same here. Thanks.
Well, if a certain Hollywood legend happens to be listening to Jazz Lineup, then I'm sure Gary Burton says, "Hello, Jane." You heard the cheekily titled Jane Fonda Called Again from the album Guided Tour by the new Gary Burton Quartet. And a big thanks to Gary for coming in to talk to me. Right, a change of mood now. Saxophonist Adam Waldman has been making his presence felt on the British scene for a few years, and he goes from strength to strength with his new album Everything We Hold. Waldman's band, Kairos Quartet, features John Scott on drums, Ivo Neem on piano, and Jasper Hoiby on bass, and they strike a fine balance between melody and groove on this new record. This is a piece called The 99 Part 1. Adam Waldman's The 99 Part 1, Great Scott, a passing reference to the drummer, John Scott, who's a member of the Kairos Quartet. That track is from the new album Everything We Hold, which you'll find on the Name label. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre, on FM, online and on digital radio. Next up, a very special duo session recorded a few weeks back at the BBC's Maida Vale Studios, featuring the inspired pairing of pianist Andrew McCormack and saxophonist Jason Yard in the year that marks their fifth anniversary of playing together. You'll be able to listen to an interview I conducted with the musicians after we hear their opening number, the Andrew McCormack composition, Obsessive. Thank you. Obsessive by Andrew McCormack on piano and Jason Yard on soprano saxophone. Gentlemen, this is the fifth anniversary of your time together from the start of My Duo way back when. How have things progressed and developed in that time?
It's been great, actually, not only the playing that we've done together, but I think the more work Andrew and I have done away from this project has kind of fed in to what we do as a duo as well. So it's great developing ideas that we've had through writing for orchestras and playing in different people's bands and somehow channeling all of that into this kind of duo thing.
Andrew?
I mean, for me personally, I think my playing has developed a lot. I guess being one part of two musicians presents some challenges that you don't really have to necessarily deal with if you play in a quartet or even a trio. So I've had to work on some technical things in my own playing. And I think that's developed a lot just having done the duo for so long.
You mentioned groups, Jason. You do a wide range of activities. A kind of common denominator between the two of you is the trio. Andrew, you've led your trio for many years. Jason, you've led the Wah trio for many years. So having a drummer or a bass player, having rhythmic support has obviously been a fundamental part of this wide range of activities that you've done. What's it like when you don't have a drummer or a bass player, when it's just the two of you?
Playing in duo has actually made me a stronger trio player because I'm able to lead much more. I feel stronger playing either on my own or with just one other musician.
Does it actually help your timekeeping if you don't have a drummer?
Supposedly.
Is that a loaded question? Jason, don't answer that.
It's funny, I had someone ask me that question the other day, and he was like, how do you stop from speeding up? And I was like, well, I don't know.
I mean, the thing, I guess one of the answers to that is, in this context, because it's quite a kind of rhapsodic, kind of classical lineup, if you like, we, as long as we both decide to speed up or slow down at the same time, there's actually kind of a natural ebb and flow that you can add.
Which you're listening to each other.
Yeah, and that's nice because you, in a way, yes, you do have to be a stronger rhythm player in the absence of a drummer, but it also allows you to be a bit more flexible where, yeah, you know, bars can shift and
dynamically as well.
Yeah,
actually,
and it means you're not so wedded to time in that way. Not to say that you shouldn't play in time, but when, you know, if there is any moment where you can kind of just make it a bit more fluid, it's nice to be able to do that in this kind of context.
Well, in the centre of that piece, we heard you trading these really nice 8-bar phrases, and the element of conversation and dialogue was very, very strong. Is that something that's always at the forefront of your mind, this manner of talking to each other while you're playing, talking through the instruments?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that's the goal in any setting, but certainly the duo, you're very directly communicating with each other because, you know, it's only the other person you're playing with, so
it is just that conversation, it's just the two of us. You know, I suppose the third person would be the audience if you're so grateful to have one, but but yeah, the fact that it's just the two of us, there's, you know, it's, you give an idea out and it's the only person it's coming back from is your partner, so
it's great. Let's hear more of that conversation. What are you going to play next?
We're going to do one of my pieces now called Thank You For Today. This is actually, it's a very old piece as well.
Because I should mention that first piece, Obsessive, was Andrew's.
Yeah.
So one from you now, just to keep things even.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, this is it. We got to...
It's a democracy.
Yeah. It's a 5-year marriage. Right. So this is one of your pieces, Jason.
Yeah, this is one of my pieces, also from our first album. And funny enough, it's one of those pieces I've done in lots of different bands. We play it a lot with Luis Majolo's group, for example, but it's really nice just stripping it down with a pianist and it's just, you know, it's just the harmony and the melody, basically, and we go on a little journey. And it's called Thank You For Today.
OK, let's listen to Thank You For Today.
Mm-hmm.
Thank You For Today, composed by saxophonist Jason Yard and performed by Jason and pianist Andrew McCormack. There'll be more session music from the duo later on the show. Now to the vocalist of the moment, Gregory Porter. His career has really taken off in the last few years, and his new album, Liquid Spirit, marks his debut for the iconic Blue Note label. As with his previous releases, most of the repertoire is original music by the man himself. And this track, No Love Dying, makes the point that Mr. Porter can write a good melody as well as sing one.
There will be no love that's dying here. The bird that flew in through my window simply lost his way. He broke his wing, I helped him heal, and then he flew away. Well, the death of love is everywhere, but I won't let it be. There will be no love that's dying here for me. There will be no love that's dying here. The mirror that fell from the wall was raggedy, that's all. It rests up on a rusty nail before it made us fall. Well, the bones of love are everywhere, but I won't let it be. There will be no love that's dying here for me. There will be no love that's dying here. For flowers in my Asian vase is not a sign we're dead. I paid for three, a sweet old lady gave me four instead. There's some doubt that's out about this love, but I won't let it be. There will be no love that's dying here for me. Simply lost his way. He broke his wings, I helped him heal, and then he flew away. Well, the death of love is everywhere, but I won't let it be. There will be no love that's dying here for me. No, there will be no love that's dying. There will be no love that's dying for you and me. Oh, there will be no love dying here. No, not for me. There will be no love that's dying here. No, there will be no love that's dying here. No, 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 no.
No Love Dying by Gregory Porter from the album Liquid Spirit, which is also his debut for Blue Note Records. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre, on FM, online and on digital radio. Next up, more session music from the gifted duo of pianist Andrew McCormack and saxophonist Jason Yard, recorded at our Maida Vale studios on the 6th of June. The pair opened their second set with McCormack's composition, Vista.
Thank you.
Vista, composed by Andrew McCormack, played by Andrew McCormack on piano and Jason Yard on soprano saxophone, the McCormack Yard duo, and they're back to talk to me. The two of you have also been experimenting more with different sound effects that you can get from you, Andrew, reaching inside the piano. At some points in gigs, Jason, I've seen you direct the horn just under the lid of the piano as well. Is that broader range of sound something that you're actively thinking about as well, maybe for the future?
I think if you've got to play for, say, an hour or an hour and a half, we're not using any electronics or anything like that yet,
I suppose.
All right, so that's going to be later in the future.
Never say never.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you want to try and, keep things interesting for yourself as well as, the audience. And we're just playing these instruments. We're not using any other instruments. So what are the possibilities of those instruments? And for the piano, certainly it's not just the keys. It's strings
and wood,
metal and pedals even, all sorts of things you can do. So it's good to get stuck in there and find some new things.
Yeah. I mean, we've always been thinking about not only the sonics of what we can do as a duo, but also when we add... It was always the plan to add different musicians along the journey. So maybe perhaps every other album, there might be some vocalists, or maybe we do a project with a choir or a string orchestra or something.
The duo might expand. Talking of the future, what's coming up next for you guys? Do you have another recording planned?
Well, we're currently mixing our third album, which is going to feature the Elysian Quartet. It's a string quartet based in London. And they're a fantastic quartet, and they play a lot of contemporary classical music, but they're also great improvisers. And we didn't want to just book a straight quartet that could just read the charts and, they'd become our backing band, essentially. We wanted to just make a real
bring
nice...
Bring them into the fabric of the sound, yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun, actually, exploring all the different textures we can have with another group joining the fray, so to speak. The more we kind of get inside what we can do on our individual instruments, that in turn feeds into what we've done with the string quartet. And so hopefully, if all goes to plan, that album will be out early next year.
Fantastic. What's the final piece going to be?
So we're going to do another one of mine. This is a very old piece from 1990-something that we used to play with J-Life, actually, many years ago.
The first group that you were in?
Yeah. So
so it has a history?
It does have a history, yeah. And so this is basically a revamped version of one of the tunes that we did, and it's called Dark Too Bright.
Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Jason Yard and Andrew McCormack, the duo McCormack Yard, Dark to Bright. Dark Too Bright by Andrew McCormack and Jason Yard, recorded at the BBC Maida Vale Studios. Big thanks to the two of them for coming in. Well, that's almost it for tonight. For more jazz on the BBC, check out Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights. This week he's on at 11:45 due to the proms, and he presents a previously unbroadcast concert of the great guitar maverick Fred Frith. And on next week's jazz lineup, Claire Martin presents concert music by saxophonist Paul Towndrow and pianist Steve Hamilton, recorded at this year's Glasgow Jazz Festival. I'll also be joining her to unearth another alternative jazz classic from the vaults for this month's Now's the Time. To finish off tonight, bassist Christian McBride, leading a trio featuring pianist Christian Sands and drummer Ulysses Owens Jr. It's called Hallelujah Time, and it's from the album Out Here on the Mac Avenue label. Till next time, from me, Kevin Legrand, bye-bye.
I'm John Shea, and welcome once again to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night. Mozart and Tchaikovsky are the presiding spirits in my opening concert this morning, which comes from the Polish Radio Symphony Orchestra and their chief conductor, Lukasz Borowicz. There's Mozart with a difference in a few minutes, his clarinet concerto played on the viola, and later in Tchaikovsky's orchestral suite called Mozartiana. Mozart was in the middle of composing The Marriage of Figaro when, in January 1786, the Emperor Joseph II commissioned him to write for an after-dinner entertainment. Mozart responded with a comedy called Der Schauspieldirektor, The Impresario, all about the difficulties of putting on an opera. This is the overture. Łukasz Borowicz conducted the Polish Radio Symphony Orchestra in the overture to Mozart's opera Der Schauspieldirektor, The Impresario. Well, I promised you some Mozart with a difference, and here it is now, his clarinet concerto played on the viola. This anonymous arrangement was published a decade after his death, and as you'll hear, it changes some of the solo part to make it more viola-friendly. The soloist is Richard Grablewski.